United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit is open according to law. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. This is Judge Wilson in Tampa. Judge Rosenbaum is in Fort Lauderdale and Judge Hull is in Atlanta. And we have two appeals that are scheduled for oral argument this morning. And I see that counsel are ready for the first appeal. It's the state of Florida versus the United States. Henry Whitaker is here for the appellant, the state of Florida, and Thomas Byron is here for the United States. And Mr. Whitaker, are you ready to proceed with your argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
May it please the court, Henry Whitaker on behalf of Florida. The federal government has adopted an immigration enforcement policy that conflicts with Congress's direction to the executive branch to remove and detain criminal aliens. And in asking the question about the relevant statute here, 1226C, I think it's useful to separate out two different issues. The first is whether the language of 1226C is in fact mandatory. That question is answered pretty squarely, I think, by Supreme Court precedent in at least three different decisions, in DeMoore versus Kim, Jennings versus Rodriguez, and Nielsen versus Preop. The Supreme Court has pretty clearly told us that the language of 1226C is mandatory and therefore would displace any ordinary presumption that the executive branch has enforcement discretion, at least where 1226 is applicable.
As a practical matter, there are, and correct me if I have this wrong, but my understanding is that there are currently about 3.2 million non-citizens who are subject to orders of removal, and there are 34,000 beds. Is that right?
Well, the government has given us very differing figures on detention capacity.
Is that roughly right?
34,000 is the figure that they have given us in the record in this case, Your Honor. That's correct.
Okay. So obviously, right, that being the circumstance, it's impossible for all 3.2 million people who are subject to orders of removal to be detained immediately. I mean, you would agree with that as a practical matter, right?
For all aliens, sure. But what we're talking about in this case, Your Honor,
I know, but there are more than 34,000. There are more than 34,000 non-citizens who would be subject to the parts that you are saying are mandatory and that the government has no discretion as to how to set its enforcement priority.
Well, I don't know that actually is necessarily supported by this record, Your Honor, because what we're talking about here are criminal aliens subject to 1226C, which is a relatively cabined category of aliens. We're not talking about 3.2 million. Indeed, the record in this case reflects that out of 180,000 book-ins that occurred last year, and this is in docket entry 36, Exhibit A.
In the state of Florida?
No, this is nationwide, but I guess I'm just trying to address Your Honor's point about enforcement resources. But I guess here's the point. The record in this case reflects that there were a number of aliens that under the government's new enforcement policy that were in custody in Florida, and that Florida essentially handed to the government on a silver platter that they sort of deliberately declined to take into custody. And I guess the question in my mind is, it's not what, does the government at least have an obligation to try to comply with the mandatory obligation of 1226C? And the record in this case, I think, reflects that they are not even trying. And again,
Mr. Whitaker, you started your argument with the statement, at least where 1226C is applicable. As you know, a key issue in this case is whether it's even applicable to these Florida prisoners when there's no pending removal proceeding against them. Is that not the issue in the case, or at least one of the issues?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely.
So we understand, and I think Judge Rosenbaum's right. We got practical impossibilities here, which are underpinning this policy. But you said yourself, at least where 1226C is applicable. So you saw the Fifth Circuit decision. You understand the government's position is primarily, this isn't even applicable here against the Florida prisoners because the government has not started removal proceedings. Now, and I think that the record's fairly clear. They gave 9 examples. I mean, you yourself have given examples and say nothing's happened, right? So why is this applicable when this is not pending removal? There's no removal proceeding that's even begun.
Right. Well, I think and the Fifth Circuit's decision was premised on the idea that detention and removal can be sort of separated out in this context. And I do not think that is correct.
I'm going to the statutory language, you know, pending removal. Okay. And why is it even applicable when there's no removal proceeding have even started, much less a final removal order?
Well, that's because the relevant language in 1226C actually is applicable to, quote, any alien. And in the pre-op case, the Supreme Court held, I think quite clearly, that term is defined by the aliens who are described in paragraph 1 of subsection C of section 1226. There's no indication.
Would you agree though that 1226 is an enforcement statute? It's related to enforcement in some way. I mean, it's a detention statute, but it's related to enforcement of the priorities. Well, it's related to enforcement of the immigration laws. Would you agree?
It certainly is related to enforcement.
Right. Okay, so here's the question. Then isn't there in every context where this type of thing is at issue and prosecutorial resources are not all abundant and decisions have to be made, isn't in every case where that's the situation, discretion granted to the enforcing authority to decide its priorities and how to use its limited resources?
No, that's not correct, Your Honor. I mean, the Supreme Court recognized in Heckler versus Cheney that certainly Congress is fully empowered to limit the government's enforcement discretion in particular cases. And I think in this particular statute, there is substantial evidence that Congress did not intend or wish the mandatory command of 1226C to depend on such questions. I mean, they had these transition period custody rules which were enacted and applicable in the 2 years immediately following enactment of the statute that gave the government a temporary safety valve if it lacked.
Let me ask you a question though. In Town of Castle Rock versus Gonzalez, that would be one of these types of prosecutorial types of cases. And in that was a Supreme Court case. And there, didn't the court conclude that even though the language was shall arrest, that the prosecuting authority still had discretion to determine when it would, I mean, as a practical matter, it needed to have that discretion. Isn't that what the court held?
Yes, but the court has held the contrary in 3 different cases with respect to this particular statute.
But not in the context of enforcement, right? I mean, not in the context of making prosecutorial type decisions, immigration, resource types of decisions. It wasn't in that context.
Well, first of all, I think it is about enforcement. The court definitely held in those cases that it displaces the government's enforcement discretion to some degree. So I don't think there's any question of some kind of Castle Rock style presumption that Congress has displaced the government's enforcement discretion. It has. And the question is how much, not whether it has. And so I think that the cases like Town of Castle Rock are quite beside the point in this context. But I think, again, there is no indication in the unqualified language of 1226C that there is some implicit limitation if the government has decided to remove someone. And I guess it would be quite odd to me, given the history canvassed by the Supreme Court in DeMoore versus Kim.
But the discretion, but the discretion that's limited by this statute is a discretion to release people who are already in custody, right? I mean, that's to release people who are already in the government's custody who qualify under these particular parts of the statute. That's the, that is the part that is limited.
No, I don't think that's correct, Your Honor. It's a direction to take aliens into custody who have committed certain crimes and engage in other kinds of related misconduct. That is an unqualified directive that does not depend on an antecedent exercise of discretion. And I think, quite frankly, it would be quite odd if Congress, in limiting the government's enforcement discretion in this way, would have intended, if the government is right that the application, the mandatory language of 1226C is applicable only if the government does some antecedent discretionary thing, then basically it's within the government's power to decide in its discretion to remove zero criminal aliens subject to 1226C. And I think that, that is a quite odd reading of the statute because it would read that to be a nullity. And what Congress was concerned with in enacting the statute in 1996 was the fact that the government was paying insufficient attention, not just to detaining, but to removing criminal aliens who are here in the United States and committing various crimes. That's set forth, I think, quite nicely by the Supreme Court in DeMoore versus Kim.
And well, Mr. Whitaker, so I'm clear now. If let's say the Department of Homeland Security is overwhelmed and it lacks the resources to address all non-citizens who re-enter the country illegally after November the 20th of 2020, if it's just overwhelming, it lacks the resources, just from a purely practical standpoint, what does the Department of Homeland Security do?
Well, I think, Your Honor, the only relief we are seeking in this case is invalidation of the enforcement guidelines. We're not seeking an injunction actually requiring substantive compliance with 1226C. So I think the idea is that the government at least has to make an effort to detain and remove criminal aliens subject to 1226C. If the government has various resource constraints, that may be, you know, something it needs to balance once it has enforcement, once it is, its ICE officials are not bound by these enforcement guidelines that conflict with the priorities that have been established by Congress. And if there were a future case in which the issue arose, whether the government—
But all the government is seeking to do in this case is to prioritize the removal of those who are a danger to the security of the United States. And so if I understand the government's argument is that the department cannot prioritize that nonviolent non-citizens who re-enter the country are required to have the same status as aggravated felons, terrorists, spies. The government can't prioritize, even if it's overwhelmed. That doesn't make any sense to me. Why the state of Florida would even want the Department of Homeland Security not to prioritize?
Your Honor, to be clear, we're not contending that the government shouldn't prioritize. It may need to. We are just saying that it needs to prioritize in a manner consistent with how Congress has directed the government to prioritize. I mean, President Obama's Solicitor General told the Supreme Court that Congress has directed.
Your argument is that the department can't prioritize.
No, Your Honor, that's not our argument. Our argument is that the department needs to prioritize in accordance with the directives of Congress. Here in 1226C, Congress has directed the executive branch to prioritize the detention and removal of criminal aliens. And it is not doing that in the enforcement guidelines.
And it's not all criminal aliens. It's criminal aliens convicted of aggravated felonies. And your argument is Congress says they shall be detained and removed. That's your argument. Can you identify anybody in Florida jail? I assume there are quite a few people who would meet the definition of criminal aliens convicted of aggravated felonies. But I didn't see where anybody's identified anybody who's getting out that's actually got a removal proceeding and a notice to appear against them. You haven't identified one, have you?
That's right, Your Honor. Well, I understand the government.
So there's nobody here that you put in the record that's in Florida jail right now that's meets the definition. First of all, I am sure hypothetically there are many that meet the definition of criminal aliens convicted of aggravated felonies. But my question is, you haven't identified a single one that has a removal, pending removal proceeding against them, correct?
That's right, but the government's obligation in this context, Your Honor, is not dependent on the existence of a pending removal proceeding. And I think
I know that's one of the issues in the case, though. I mean, the government says it is. You say it isn't. That's part of the case, right?
It is part of the case. And I guess, and I'd like to, if I may, I see that I'm into my rebuttal time.
Yeah, this is what helped me with this. It doesn't, the statute doesn't say the government's got to initiate removal proceedings against every criminal alien in the United States. The statute says the government may, correct?
No, that's not correct, Your Honor. The in 1226C.
No, I'm talking about A. I'm talking about A.
Well, that's right, Your Honor, but I think that only
A has may, right?
That's true, but the aliens we're talking about, Your Honor, are not subject to that discretionary language because they are criminal aliens who are subject to 1226C, which notably, in contrast to the language Your Honor mentions, contains mandatory language requiring the government to detain those aliens. And because detention in this context, as the Supreme Court made clear in DeMora versus Kim, is pending removal proceedings, I don't think it's possible to separate out the removal proceeding from an unqualified obligation to detain, as the Fifth Circuit, I think, mistakenly did in the decision. You can't separate out those two things in this context. And the pending removal proceedings in subsection A of the statute only underscores that detention under subsection C necessarily carries with it a removal proceeding. That supports our argument, not theirs, I think. I see that I'm well into my rebuttal time, Your Honors. I'd be happy to continue or answer further questions if you have more questions for me.
All of your rebuttal time is reserved, Mr. Whitaker. Thank you. And we'll hear from Mr. Byron.
Thank you, Judge Wilson. May it please the court, Thomas Byron from the Department of Justice here on behalf of the federal government defendants. The district court here properly denied the preliminary injunction, which is, of course, always extraordinary relief in the first instance that Florida seeks. And it's particularly extraordinary that Florida seeks an injunction that would constrain the deep-rooted prosecutorial discretion that the Supreme Court has repeatedly recognized, as the questions to my friend Mr. Whitaker demonstrated in cases like Castle Rock and Hecker against Cheney. The practical concerns that you raised, Judge Wilson, in your questions are really quite significant, and Judge Rosenbaum, you did as well, very, very significant here. The record demonstrates that there are appropriated funds by Congress to support only 34,000 detention beds at this time, and because of other litigation, COVID concerns, and similar constraints, there are limitations on the ability to use that capacity. In related proceedings in the Fifth Circuit, which recently issued a stay decision, staying an injunction very much like the one that Florida seeks here, the court there recognized that fundamental deep-rooted prosecutorial discretion was not disturbed by Congress in Section 1226C. Indeed, as the court's questions correctly recognize, the provisions of 1226C apply only after there's been an initial decision, that fundamental prosecutorial discretion decision, to charge an individual non-citizen by issuing a notice to appear and proceeding with removal proceedings before an immigration judge. That predicate is essential because otherwise it would be insufficient merely to use the word shall, as the court in Castle Rock emphasized, and City of Chicago as well, merely using the word shall does not fundamentally alter that deep-rooted prosecutorial discretion, or as Heckler said, the law enforcement discretion that federal agencies always have. In particular here, I think it's worth focusing on the Fifth Circuit stay decision. Florida, in its briefs and its argument today, fundamentally mischaracterizes the Supreme Court's decisions in the 1226C cases, such as Priap, Rodriguez, et cetera. Those cases were not about prosecutorial discretion. They didn't address the question presented here. And they did not hold, as Florida argues, that the provisions of Section 1226C require the initiation of enforcement proceedings. Now, to be fair, Florida was unclear in its initial briefing, both in this court and in the district court, about the scope of its argument or the scope of the injunction it sought. But it has clarified now in its response, in its 28J response concerning the Fifth Circuit stay decision. It has clarified that Florida does seek, Florida argues, and I'm quoting here from page one of their 28J response, Florida argues that Section 1226C requires the initiation of removal proceedings. That is precisely the deep-rooted prosecutorial discretion that the Fifth Circuit held consistent with Supreme Court precedent has not been disrupted by 1226C, which pertains only to the detention and the availability of bond release, release on bond and bond hearings of individuals in removal proceedings. And
is there anything in the Fifth Circuit decision that's incorrect from the government's point of view?
Well, Judge Hull, we certainly disagree with certain elements of the court's conclusions about the likelihood of success on the merits on certain aspects, but of course we didn't have to prevail there and we don't have to prevail here on every one of the arguments we've raised, because there are several reasons why Florida's arguments fail on the merits, and moreover why, as the Fifth Circuit correctly recognized, the irreparable injury to the federal government of constraining prosecutorial discretion goes fundamentally to the separation of powers and is irreparable, and that the balance of equities would not support a preliminary injunction in this context. So
okay, I'm a little confused. If you clarify for me what you say you disagree with. I mean, they just said pretty much the injunctive standard, but so we know likelihood of success on the merits and so forth, but is there any part of the injunction that they left in place that you disagree with, or is there any reasoning there that you think is wrong?
Well, Judge Hull, I think that they left in place, as we understand the injunction that remains in place, it essentially addresses what the government has, what DHS has always understood 1226C to require, which is that with respect to individuals already in removal proceedings and already detained, that they may not be released pending the removal proceedings conclusion.
Because that's only what 1226 does. That's the narrow scope of 1226.
I think that's right, Judge Hull, and my understanding of the Fifth Circuit's stay decision is that it left in place the injunction to the extent that it merely requires the government to continue enforcing or to continue applying 1226C as we always have. Florida, by the way, mischaracterizes as well the government's historical interpretation and application of the statute. This is not a change in the current administration. Our interpretation has been consistent, and it is exactly as you say, Judge Hull, that when there is a removal proceeding pending and when the individual in that removal proceeding is also detained, they're not entitled to a bond hearing. That's what the Supreme Court has held. That's what we've always held. No administration has ever adopted the extraordinary interpretation of that statute that Florida urges here, which would not only apply in those circumstances that we've been discussing, but would also compel the initiation of removal proceedings against individuals that a particular state identifies. It would allow a state to arrogate to itself the federal government's fundamental and significant enforcement authority in the immigration arena. And that would be improper.
Is the record correct right now? Florida hasn't identified one person who is a criminal alien that meets the aggravated felony definition, although I realize it's a little bit broader here, but we'll just say aggravated felony for purposes of encompassing whatever the class of aliens that are subject to 1226C. Florida hasn't identified anybody that they are having to supervise or get ready to supervise that is actually in removal proceedings. Is that correct?
I believe that's right, Judge Hall. That's my understanding of the record as well.
I mean, not even a final removal order. Just that they're not even in removal proceedings.
That's my understanding, is that no notice to appear has been issued with respect to the individuals Florida has identified in the record, and that that's significant because that is a predicate requirement of 1226C, as the Fifth Circuit recognized. And by the way, the Fifth Circuit actually emphasized that that is the lesson of Johnson against Rodriguez in the Supreme Court's decision, that that Florida contends holds something quite different, the opposite, and that's just not, that's not correct. That's not what the...
Well, why they can't do a notice and appears now is because you got to put the notice to appear and the date in the same hearing. You got to put it in the first document. They don't even know when they're going to get out of jail. And the Supreme Court's told us now you got to have the notice to appear and the date of the first hearing in the same document, right?
Yes, Judge Hall, you've identified some of the many complicated vagaries.
So they don't even serve state prisoners with this now, because it's hard enough to serve people that are out with it or whatever.
Judge Hall, you're absolutely right. There are a lot of complications in initiating removal proceedings. And, and as you say as well, in identifying aggravated felony situations under the categorical and modified categorical approach, as this court's and other circuits' precedents make clear. And that's why, by the way, it's not even possible to identify with any certainty today, for example, how many...
I mean, with regard to how many beds you have, I don't even know how you go about identifying. I mean, I guess you would have to do criminal aliens and go into the judges have trouble doing it.
So you're right that with the limited bed capacity and all of the constraints that we have on it with COVID and other injunctions, the net we're right now, by the way, in the Fifth Circuit stay record demonstrates this. In our stay motion in that court, we included an updated declaration from Mr. Berg, and that demonstrates that we're at 95% of available bed capacity right now. And remember, available capacity is actually about 75% of 34,000, so it's about 29,000. Right now we're at 95% capacity, so we have very limited currently empty bed space to deal with the highest priority threats to public safety, national security, and border security. And those are the focuses of the interim priorities. And it's important also to recognize that these interim priorities will be superseded in less than a week. By the end of September, that's next Thursday, the Department of Homeland Security has committed to issuing the revised priorities that will supersede these, that will render this appeal moot altogether, and that will therefore require this court not to, it will preclude this court from having to consider this on the merits.
Well, what do we say about that? Because the government said that five other times already. We're going to have them done next week, and there's a lot going on next week. So
certainly understand, Judge Hall, that we've been unable to make the earlier deadlines that we identified. However, I've been assured, and as you may know, we made the same representation in the Fifth Circuit, that this was a firm deadline that the agency...
Okay, let me ask you this then. The problem here then is I doubt they're going to be materially different on as far as this issue. Okay, so let's say that on this particular issue, suppose the final are pretty much like this, then where are we?
Well, Judge Hall, I don't want to presume that they will be very much like the interim priorities. I think they'll be the subject of extensive study. If you look at earlier priorities issued in other administrations going back more than 20 years, in fact, going back to
I know they change. I don't question that, but we're in a different time with different issues going on. And
sure, I think they'll be similar in certain relevant respects, which is, for example, the fundamental statutory interpretation of 1226C, it only applies after notice to appear. It only applies to individuals in detention and whether they're entitled to bond hearings. That's not going to change. You're absolutely right. But that's a statutory question. The priorities themselves, I don't know what they're going to say, Judge Hall, but I do think it's important to evaluate them on their own merits. And let's even assume that even if they did say essentially the same kinds of ordering, same basic focus, it would still be true for all the reasons we pointed out in our brief, that it would be committed to agency discretion, as Heckler makes clear, and that that fundamental deep-rooted prosecutorial discretion was not constrained by Congress in 1226C and is not the proper basis for an injunction like the one that Florida seeks in this case, and that Texas sought and obtained and was stayed in the Fifth Circuit. So
when the new priorities get issued, assuming that they get issued next week or before we can get our opinion out on this case, whatever it may wind up being, I mean, to follow up on what Judge Hall was asking you about and to follow up on something you said, that is that the fundamental kernel of, as I understand, the state's case is that they don't agree with the government's interpretation of 1226C to require only as it pertains, well, first of all, to allow for prosecutorial discretion, and second, to apply only as it pertains to people who are already in detention. So is there a reason why this wouldn't be moot, since that is the same issue that would continue to exist, it sounds like, regardless of whatever the priorities of enforcement are? Is there some type of capable of repetition yet evading review exception that might be applicable, or any other exception that might be applicable to mootness doctrine?
I mean, Judge Rosenbaum, I don't want to preclude the arguments that I'm sure my friend will make in response to whatever happens next week and you know, what we argue to the court. I don't want to get ahead of all that, but I can say that I think at this point, I can't imagine that exceptions like capable of repetition would apply in the circumstances, because the review of these agency actions is limited to the administrative record. That administrative record, and in fact, the agency decision itself, are going to be different, and that would be the appropriate basis for any new challenge to the final priorities when they're issued. Anyway, I merely meant to point out that I see my time's expired. If I could just wrap this point up. I merely wanted to point out to the court that the Fifth Circuit emphasized that the balance of equities supported the stay and did not support an injunction, in part because the interim priorities had been in effect since February, with the exception of a few days before the administrative stay was entered in that case, and would soon be superseded. And the court relied on that in the Fifth Circuit stay decision. We think this court can rely on that as well, in recognizing that there's no basis at this time for the extraordinary relief that Florida seeks in this case.
What's going to happen? Is it going to be that this case is remanded to let them amend the complaint they have, or what? I guess we'll have to get supplemental briefing as the government and let the plaintiff decide what they think it should be.
Certainly, Judge Hall, I think it's likely that we'll have motion practice on this. And so, again, I don't want to get ahead of that. I do think that it's pretty likely that we would argue that the dispute is moot when the interim priorities are superseded, and that on that basis, Munsingware would require, you know, vacatur of the underlying decision. And since there's nothing meaningful that was decided here, that wouldn't be a significant aspect, but dismissal of the underlying action as well. Florida could always, of course, bring a new complaint challenging any new agency action that it believes is inconsistent with the legal standards, and we could litigate that. But that, again, would be a different dispute than the one we have here. Happy to address any other questions if the court has them. I see my time has expired. We would urge the court to affirm the correct denial of preliminary injunctive relief sought by Florida in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Byron. Mr. Whitaker, you've reserved some time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to briefly talk, address Judge Hall's point about the difficulty of identifying aliens subject to 1226C. The record in this case reflects, and I don't think the government disputes, that there were, in fact, criminal aliens that had detainers issued who were subject to 1226C, that the government made a deliberate decision not to take into federal custody after they were released from state custody. So here there's no question of a difficulty of identifying aliens subject to 1226C. Again, the issue here is whether, when presented with such an alien on a silver platter, so to speak, the government has an obligation to take action consistent with the mandatory directive of Congress. Judge Hall, you also mentioned the difficulty of issuing a notice of appearance. I don't think that we're suggesting that there needs to be I'm not even sure that the government is suggesting, but obviously my friend can correct me if I'm wrong, but that a notice of appear has to issue before detention. I think the important point is just that a removal proceeding must issue at some point, because that is what measures the length of detention, consistent with Damore versus Kim. I also want to address briefly the Fifth Circuit's decision, because I think that there is a part of the Fifth Circuit's decision that's actually quite helpful to Florida's position in this case. And while we certainly disagree with the Fifth Circuit's sort of core conclusion, I think at the same time, the Fifth Circuit did recognize that 1226C is a significant limit on prosecutorial discretion, and that the shall is indeed mandatory in some circumstances. And I guess, given that conclusion, it's very difficult for me to see how it can be mandatory with respect to certain prosecutorial decisions, but yet the exact same language is not mandatory with respect to others. The Supreme Court, as a general matter, has told us to interpret federal statutes consistently, and I think that would be quite inconsistent.
But the Supreme Court has never constrained the exercise of prosecutorial discretion, even with the type of mandatory language that exists in the statute in this case, has it?
Well, I don't think that's quite correct, Your Honor. I mean, Heckler versus Cheney certainly reflects that there are limits on the government's enforcement discretion. And indeed, in Heckler versus Cheney, if you look at footnote 4, the court actually identified a DC Circuit decision from 1983 called Adams versus Richardson, which actually ordered the government to institute Title VI enforcement proceedings against various schools who were sort of recalcitrant in conducting desegregation. So there certainly is precedent in certain circumstances when you have, a circumstance where Congress has exercised its constitutional authority to constrain the exercise of executive branch prosecutorial discretion, where the executive branch may be required to terminate certain proceedings or indeed initiate certain proceedings.
Counsel, what do you have to say about, let's just assume for purposes of the question, that a new set of enforcement priorities is issued next week? What are your thoughts on what happens with this case?
I'm not sure yet, Your Honor. I think I really would have to see them to take a position on what would happen at that point and evaluate our options. I don't want to get ahead of what the government is going to do. Obviously, we're seeking a preliminary injunction in this case. The government has, these things take time. I understand that, but the government has missed several deadlines before. So they say they're going to issue next week, and I guess I'll believe it when I see it. And we can go from there. But I'm not going to take a position on what should happen without knowing what the guidelines are, I guess, at this
point. Can you rule out the possibility that this case would become moot?
I can't rule it out, Your Honor, but I can't certainly rule out the contrary, and definitely happy to tell the court our position when we see the actual guidelines. But on resource constraints, I just want to stress that, because I think I got cut off. There is something in 1226C that spoke to this. In the 2-year period after 1226C was enacted, Congress provided a safety valve in the event that the government lacked sufficient detention capacity to comply with the new mandatory detention requirements that Congress was enacting to constrain the executive branch's prosecutorial discretion. And the fact that it specifically spoke to that in the very statute that created this mandatory obligation, I think speaks quite clearly that the kind of considerations that resource constraint considerations is not a basis for departing from the mandatory language of the statute itself. I see that my time has expired. I'd be happy to answer any further questions the court might have for me.
Thank you. We have your argument, Mr. Whitaker and Mr. Byron. Thank you.